ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
फर्स्ट कैंटो 13 चैप्टर टेक्स्ट नंबर 29.
एवं राजा विदुरेणानुजेन प्रज्ञा चक्षुर्भोदित आजमीडः चित्वा स्वेषु स्नेहपाशं दृढिम्नो निश्चक्राम भ्रातृसंदर्शिता दाद्वा एवं राजा विदुरेण अनुजेन प्रज्ञा चक्षुर्बोधित आजमीडः चित्वा स्वेषु स्नेहपाशान् दृढिम्नो निश्चक्राम भ्रातृसंदर्शिताद्वा एवं अजामीडः
धृतराष्ट्र सायन ऑफ द फैमिली ऑफ अजामीडः चित्वा बाय ब्रेकिंग स्वेषु रिगार्डिंग किंसमेन स्नेहपाशान स्ट्रांग नेटवर्क ऑफ अफेक्शन दृढिम्नः दृढिम्नः बिकॉज ऑफ स्टेडफास्टनेस निश्चक्राम गॉट आउट भ्रातृ बाय हिज ब्रदर संदर्शिता डायरेक्शन टू अद्वा पाथ ऑफ लिबरेशन. ट्रांसलेशन प्रपोज्ड बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद. दास महाराज धृतराष्ट्र द साइन ऑफ द फैमिली ऑफ अजमीढ़ा firmly convinced by introspective knowledge prajna broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother Vidura. Purport by his divine grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great preacher of the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, has stressed the importance of association with sadhus, pure devotees of the Lord. He said that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can achieve all perfection. We are not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life. Were we not favored by His Divine Grace, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing Him at that opportune moment, we could have become a very great business magnet. But never would we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under instructions of His Divine Grace. And here is another practical example by the action of Vidura's association with Dhritarashtra. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was tightly bound in a network of material affinities related to politics, economy and family attachment. And he did everything in his power to achieve so-called success in his planned projects. But he was frustrated from the beginning to the end, so far as his material activities were concerned. And yet, despite his life of failure, he achieved the greatest of all success in self-realization by the forceful instructions of a pure devotee of the Lord, who is the typical emblem of a sadhu. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, that one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all other kinds of association. And by doing so, one will have ample opportunity to hear the sadhus, who can cut to pieces the bonds of illusory affection in the material world. It is a fact that the material world is a great illusion, because everything appears to be a tangible reality, but at the next moment evaporates like the dashing foam of the sea or a cloud in the sky. A cloud in the sky undoubtedly appears to be a reality because it rains. And due to rains, so many temporary green things appear. But in the ultimate issue, everything disappears, namely the cloud, rain and green vegetation, all in due course. But the sky remains, and the varieties of the sky or luminaries also remain forever. Similarly, the absolute truth, which is compared to the sky, remains eternally, and the temporary cloud-like illusion comes and goes away. Foolish living beings are attracted by the temporary cloud. But intelligent men are more concerned with the eternal sky, with all its variegatedness. Om Ajnanata Mirandasya. By his resolute determination, thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation, as directed by his younger brother Vidura. There is an example given in Srimad Bhagavatam that just like if two arani sticks are rubbed with each other and there will be a fire in between. Similarly, the guru and the disciple, they are compared to the two arani sticks. And when they come together, the guru is very pleased to instruct the disciple, who is very eager and enthusiastic and inquisitive, to learn and hear. And the disciple is very happy, very pleased to take shelter of a guru who is potent with wisdom of realization, realization of the life, God, world, everything. So when they come together, when there is a potent guru and a fertile disciple, when they come together, they are compared to two arani sticks. And in this way, the fire that comes in between the two arani sticks is compared to the enlightenment that lights up the heart of the disciple. That's why we say, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. So our eyes have the cataract due to which everything looks two-two. The duality of this world, Sukha Dukha, Shita Ushna, Mana Paman. But that cataract is removed when the eye is Jnana Anjana Shalakaya, when the Guru gives us the Divya Jnana. Then we get to see the world with a Shastra Chakshu, with a proper perspective of what is right, what is wrong, what is Hitakarak, what is Hanikarak, what is beneficial, unbeneficial. One can clearly see. And then with the enlightened eyes, one can walk in the world freely, freed from all kinds of illusions. One can live even in the midst of the world, just like a drop of water on a lotus leaf, as explained in Bhagavad Gita. Padma Patram Ivambasa. He says, even if one is still in the material world, then when one's heart is enlightened with knowledge, then one will not become affected by the material world. So this is what is supposed to happen to every disciple when one takes shelter of a guru properly. All through this series of verses, Vidura spoke very strongly to Dhritarashtra. And right now in this particular verse we are seeing that enlightenment that Dhritarashtra achieved has now brought him to the point of practical application, which is going to the forest, renouncing all the worldly things, and completely taking shelter of the Lord. Dhritarashtra is heading to that. So this means operation is successful. So Vidura's strong preaching was not a failure. You don't find Dhritarashtra disheartened and picking up a quarrel with his brother Vidura and driving him out like Duryodhana drove him out. That didn't happen. Rather, the opposite happened. The strong preaching of Vidura has had a strong effect on Dhritarashtra's heart. And Dhritarashtra became enlightened and awakened to the reality. So this is a grand success on the part of the Guru Vidura, because he has been able to successfully awaken a sleeping soul. So what is the condition of a sleeping soul? That is explained by Prabhupada in the purport. When one is asleep, the meaning of sleeping soul means one who is an illusion. Here Srila Prabhupada gives a nice example, the purport, just like this purport, this point, this example appears elsewhere, I think in Bhagavad Gita introduction also. Just like sometimes there is a cloud in the sky, when the ground is dry and full of sand, when the cloud appears in the sky, it pours down, then immediately there is thick vegetation, lushy green forests everywhere, grass and flowers and fruits and berries and creepers, everything grows. But that greenery lasts for some time, and after some time they all dry up, and they all disappear. Same way, what is this analogy? When this material world is created, the three modes of material nature are also created. So in the Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, Lord Krishna compares the material world to an upside down banyan tree. And what are the agents which nourish the root of this banyan tree? They are the three modes of material nature. The three modes of the material nature, they actually water this tree, so that the tree can grow with its large branches, the upper planetary system, middle planetary system, lower planetary systems, and all kinds of living beings in Rajoguna, Tamoguna, Sattoguna can flourish in this world. So material world is flourishing with these three modes. So in one sense it appears very attractive, but it is a world of illusion. Why? Because the world is so designed by the Creator that in this world everyone will be exchanging miseries with others. They'll be giving miseries and accepting miseries from one another, between another. So material nature itself offers sufferings to the living beings, and the living beings also offer suffering to each other. And the living entities also develop many misconceptions due to which they themselves suffer. So the topmost misconception is to think I am this body, material body. So they themselves suffer also with their body and mind. So the world, this material world, is designed like that. There are many sections of the scriptures which describe about the harsh nature of the material world. And such descriptions are given so that a conditioned soul who is maddened by illusion will read such sections and get awakened to the reality. Get awakened and understand what this material world is. So that one will not be enthusiastic to expand one's material life. But rather one will make a definite plan to wind up material life and plan to take to spiritual life and return back home, back to Godhead. One section comes to my mind, which is Jadabharata instructing Rahuguna. There he talks about an average conditioned soul coming into this world. So Jadabharata had made up his mind not to speak to anyone when he had taken birth. He was like dumb, deaf and dull. Although his body was very hale and healthy, like a bull, still he would never open his mouth. That's why it's called as Jada Bharata. But internally he was a very great Paramahamsa devotee. But externally he posed himself to be a deaf, dumb and dull person. But at one time you find, when he was carrying the palanquin of Rahuguna, he spoke. So it is that great saintly people, they sometimes remain like a standstill lake. and they don't make any sound. They don't speak at all. But other times they shower words like waterfalls, you know, continuously. So they do both these things with a purpose. They don't keep quiet without a purpose. When they find that there is no opportunity for enlightening anyone, then they'll keep quiet. When there is opportunity for enlightening anyone, then they would open their mouth and streams of words of nectar would flow, like that. And that was very appropriate for Jadabharata also. He would never speak to his brothers, he would never speak to his father, he never spoke up to anyone in the village, although he was standing like a scarecrow in the field, driving away the crows. That was the work that was given to him. Whatever food was given to him, he accepted. So, such a Bharata, Jadabharata, you find speaking up in front of Rahugana, because he knew that this is a king, and there's opportunity for enlightening him. Because the king, who is supposed to be guiding the praja, if he is foolish, the whole society will be ruined. So, he began enlightening Rahugana with various words. Of course, he gave a very allegorical speech, which Rahugana might not have been able to understand, in that section called as the Forest of Mental Enjoyment. But later on, the explanation is given also. You will read the explanation of each of those things given there. There it is said how the conditioned soul in this world terribly suffers in the fire of conditional life by various types of agents who trouble him. Beginning with, it is explained, sometimes if you see in this world, if a merchant, he has earned a lot of money. I heard here in the market yard, there was a very big shop, the man, one of the richest men. So he would be counting lots of rupee notes every day. Well-known rich man. So one day he was closing his shop and coming out, bringing out the money. Suddenly some 3-4 thieves jumped in and they stabbed him to death practically. Died. Looted all the money and they fled from there. So sometimes people are very greedy for more and more money. But sometimes one may have a lot of money, but one is plundered of one's wealth by thieves, plunderers. Similarly, the 6 plunderers in our body are the lust, pride, envy, anger, illusion, greed. They are compared to the 6 plunderers. Why? Even if one earns a lot of wealth, this wealth is taken away by the bad habits that arise from these 6 things, 6 plunderers. And they misguide a person to spend the money in the wrong direction. In this way, one becomes poverty stricken by earning the wealth. And he also says, such a merchant sometimes, such a person, such a conditioned soul in this world, is always faced with owls. Owls are the enemies who are always making sounds. And also it is said, like the crickets, in the forest you hear the cricket sound. You can hear the sound, but you can't see the creature. It only makes the sound. What are those crickets? Sometimes one is surrounded by envious relatives who are making the sound arising from envy. So when one hears their words, which are called as backbiting, we call it. Backbiting means they don't say on the face, but they will always be speaking behind the back. And when one hears criticisms from such relatives, the conditioned soul becomes very sad. It's very painful. Conditioned soul to hear such words. In the same way, he also says that one's relatives, wife, children, they all make unlimited demands of a person. For example, a person earns a lot of wealth with great difficulty. And in the course of earning the wealth, the government also puts law of taxation and tries to loot as much money as possible from a person. One tries to escape such laws. But despite such laws, one's money is sacked by the government. But whatever money is left, when one wants to preserve it, then there are other, the relatives are called as Svajanaka Dasyu. Svajanaka Dasyu means they are all Svajan, but they are also like plunderers, it is said. And one is faced with unlimited demands. Like Prabhupada writes in the Prabhupada there, he says, children come and say, they scream asking, Papa, I want this. Please give me money for this, give me money for that. Huh? Wife, children, everyone is asking for money. So, in this way, one spends abundant wealth. And over a period of time, one is bereft of wealth. Sometimes one is unable to maintain even one's family. And in the course of trying to maintain one's family, when one is unable to maintain, you will find sometimes a very big business magnat, sometimes he becomes a poverty stricken beggar. Why? In the field of business, sometimes big, powerful people come and they defeat a businessman and they make him a pauper completely. And when one is bereft of all the wealth, one tries to go to his friends for debt. And sometimes the friends drive him out. They don't give. Somebody goes to a Jyotish to ask, is there any good fortune for me? Any good luck for me? Or sometimes one goes to people who have no good sense or intelligence. They have no common sense. One goes to take shelter of such people. And that is compared to a man taking shelter of a tree, a hungry man. And a thirsty man is taking shelter of a tree, hoping that the tree will give some fruits, but it is only a thorny bush. The tree has no fruits or no flowers. Or it is like a person who rushes to see a mirage which has no water, who is very thirsty. So in this way, in this world, one is also misguided by foolish people, and one tries to search after happiness, running here and there, in various ways. And also, the material world is so designed that one is not completely made hopeless. There is always some kind of hope kept. Just like sometimes one sees the cloud formation in the sky, which looks like a beautiful marble palace. The formation looks like that. Have you seen sometimes in the cloud, you find a big elephant-type cloud, sometimes a marble palace or something like that you find. So one thinks in the forest sometimes there is a beautiful big palace and one rushes there. And one thinks, oh, there are foam beds, there are abundant furnitures and facilities for enjoyment. One enters there. And then one finds the cloud you will find in the sky, suddenly the cloud formations change. And then they get scattered away in the sky. Similarly, the palatial bungalow and the facilities that one may achieve in this world are also compared to the cloud. Why? One is not permanently allowed to live there. One may stay there for some time and enjoy for some time, but one cannot live for a long time. One is thrown out of that situation very soon. So, Prabhupada quotes this, Sutamita Ramani Samaje. He says, this thirst for enjoyment in this world, where does it arise from? It arises from the soul. The living being wants to enjoy unlimitedly. And he runs here and there searching for that type of happiness. But he's always burned by the afflicting fire of this material world. Actually, one cannot blame the children or the wife or the relatives or the friends or the enemies or the envious people or the society, because the world is filled with living entities who are covered by three modes. So they are surely going to act in these ways which are mentioned. They themselves do not know that they cause suffering to the conditioned soul, to the other person. They don't even know. Everyone is acting according to their swabhav, which arises from the three modes in which they are bound up with. So in this way, the material world is designed to purify the living entity. So it's called as forest of material enjoyment. It requires one to have a deep vision to see this kind of suffering. Because the average conditioned soul doesn't understand the suffering. Because the world is created in such a way that there are some drops of happiness given in between. That's why he says, Sutamita Ramani Samaja, he says, which means the love that arises from the friendship, family and relatives, that is like some small drop of water in a desert. Like you can see, in even average families, sometimes there may be many, many problems, but in between there are some pleasurable experiences they get. You know, some child got a first rank in the class, then immediately they forget all the other problems. Or, you know, son got a foreign chance. Or girl's marriage is arranged. Or then they think, oh, it's a grand, grand success. Or in business we got a bigger profit. Or we left a smaller house and we got a bigger house. Now we have better facility now. Isn't it? Or in this way, some small, small successes are dropped in between. So one thinks life is wonderful. After all, it is not all that bad. One feels like that. This is the arrangement of Maya. That even in the midst of illusion, one is offered some little bit of happiness so that one will continue the material life. One will not give up the material life. So what is the analogy that is being explained here in this last part of the purport? In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains about how the Kshetrajna, or the living being, is put in a particular field and gradually becomes consumed in absorption in that field. What is that field? For example, every one of us is born in a particular family, particular situation. And we are all bound by several parameters. Like you are born to a certain type of parents, certain type of job we do, certain type of situation, like parents are either rich or poor. Like see, there are children who are born in the slum. Then there are children who are born in a very rich class family. And some are born very handsome, so they become cinema actors and actresses. Some are born rich family, they become big business people. Some are born very poor, they become slum people. They become barbers, they become cobblers, like that. So every one of us in this world is put in a particular situation according to the previous karma. And in whatever situation we are put in, one becomes strongly bound by the network of illusion in that situation. Like you can even go, if you go to the slum and see, sometimes you find there are dogs running here and there. And the cooking is done outside and the food is kept outside. And the chal is open, all mosquitoes are there and people live in very dirty circumstances. And people eat, sleep, and even they have a smile on their face sometimes. You find children, even they have their play. And sometimes a person living in very posh conditions may look at them. When a car stops in a traffic signal, you can look at the slum and you may think, just see how they are suffering, how these people are living. But they are happy in their own condition, those people, because they are put in a certain field and their life goes on like that. And rich person thinks my life is much better, but he is in his own illusion, like rich class people. Once Gauranga Prabhu was telling, many people glorify him, that you speak in Atma serial and we get to see it regularly. And some people even become envious of him that he is so charismatic and is a charismatic preacher and everything. So he was telling, people don't know, he said, I have to look at the camera and I have to speak almost 8 to 10 hours a day for about 4 days continuously. You have to look at only the camera, you cannot look at any faces of any of the people. And he said, you don't know what kind of austerity it is for me. It's a very severe austerity for me. Because you don't have any reciprocation from the camera, camera is dull, just staying like that. So he said, still I do it because it's for the service of the people. And then he was telling an interesting point. He said, there are so many people who see the attractive looking faces of the cinema actors and actresses. And they think, how nice it will be if I can have a beautiful body like this. If I can be a cinema actor or actress. And I will have thousands of fans wishing me, you know, waving hands to me and, you know, writing letters to me, taking autographs from me. Many people aspire for such a position. But he said, you don't know, if you interview a cinema actor or actress, they will tell you how much the floodlights come on their face and how much, when they are acting in the movies, how much struggle they have to undergo to act in the movies and how many people try to exploit them, if you ask. And how much there is threat for their life, because many of them are murdered also. Many of them are exploited and murdered. And from various circles, from the politicians, from the muddied people, they have a lot of trouble. Although they may be apparently seen as those who are very happy people in life because they got a handsome body. But in their field, they are suffering terribly. In that particular field of the material body and situation, they are suffering. So, he was telling, from one point of view, it appears that they are very happy. But they are not happy. If you ask them, they will not be happy. Just yesterday, I met a very big man in Pune, a crorepati. So, of course, he was very interested in philosophy. I was talking many things, he was asking questions. So, in the middle of that, suddenly he said, money is the cause of all unhappiness. He himself said, he said, I have so much money, but just look at our life, how much it is torn, how much we are in anxiety. He said, what is the use of money which brings so much of anxiety? He was telling. But he said, look at you, you have nothing, you are sadhu and you are simply cheerful, you are living a very happy life. He was telling. Then he said, he has come to a temple also, he was telling, you guys are very fortunate guys, he was telling. So you will always find people in one position generally admiring people in other position, but generally in this world, everyone in any walk of life, whether rich or poor or handsome or ugly or born in a slum or born in royal family, everyone is in their own illusion. And illusion is so powerful that one is very satisfied in that illusion, quite often. And like I told you that he spoke to me yesterday like that, but such kind of awakening occasionally comes and disappears. It may just come like a lightning. Like Dhritarashtra, when he was talking, Vidura and Dhritarashtra discussion, once Dhritarashtra said, my dear Vidura, not this time, another time when earlier, one of the times when Vidura was telling Dhritarashtra about how the Kauravas should not be encouraged in their vicious plans. At that time Dhritarashtra was telling, my dear Vidura, whatever you are telling me is like the lightning in the sky. Lightning just comes and it goes away. You have seen in the sky, isn't it? Lightning sparks like this and goes away. Similarly, whenever you talk of the Kaurava children, that they are doing wrong, I of course get enlightened, but that only lasts for a short while. It appears and it disappears, like Shmashan Vairagya, we say. People sometimes get a Shmashan Vairagya. Shmashan Vairagya means, whenever somebody dies, you become fearful. I may have to die. And then when they are taken to the Shmashan, everyone is morose, the body is burnt, and everyone looks at the burning corpse, and they feel, what is life? What is the use of money? What is the use of enjoyments? What is the use of name and fame? There is nothing in this world. People get a lot of vairagya at that time. And then on the way back, when they are coming, on the way back only they forget and start talking how to divide the property. Even before they reach home only, they start quarreling. I will take this, you take that. And all that. This is Smashan Vairagya. So, we all get some small enlightenment in life. That is explained by Prabhupada. You read this verse, Namam Dushkritano Mudha Prapadyante Naradama. In that verse purport, Prabhupada says, sometimes that ass sings poetry also. Philosophy and poetry, sometimes. And Prabhupada writes that. But such braying only causes disturbance to others. He says, what is the meaning of that? Sometimes even sinful people, impious people, who indulge in all kinds of nefarious activities of the world, when their money is looted away, when they are defeated in their life, sometimes they also talk philosophy and they also talk morality. But that is compared to the braying of the ass. Because they are talking about morality, just like Karna was talking morality to Arjuna, asking him not to hit him. This kind of vicious people talking morality is compared to that. So, occasional, there may be some small portions of enlightenment which may come to the conditioned soul, which gets again camouflaged, covered over by the illusion of this world. And everyone in this world is situated in their own tiny world, like a frog in the well. Like I was thinking once earlier, when I first read this 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, philosophy, I was a young boy. So I was going to the saloon. So this thought came to my mind, just look at this saloon, barber. His only field is this small world of the saloon. And all that he gets to see is different type of heads, and different type of hairstyles, and different type of, sprays, and different type of sprays, different type of knives, and different type of this thing which he does. And different type of blades. And his world is a very small world. It's a world of hair. That's all. And all that he gets, every day he gets to get different types of heads to shave. Cleaning the heads, shaving the beards. This is his whole life. So I was once talking to that fellow. Then that fellow was telling, oh, We are barbers for the last four generations. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, now I am also a barber. And I am training my son also to become a barber. He was telling, yeah. And I asked, how long you are doing? He said, 20 years, 25 years, I am a barber. My Lord, the whole subject matter of his study is head. Not the head, hair. Only the top portion of the hair. That is his only object of study. Just see. This is called as a field. You become bound in one particular field. Same way, people who work for software companies, they may be chemical engineers, they may be civil engineers, but they join a software company, you know why. They join, and after joining software company, all you do is sit in the computer all the time, sitting in the monitor, typing, morning to evening. Nowadays, the company offers you a laptop to carry home also, so you can make a semi-office at home. And then you can, at home also, you are sitting with a laptop all the time, doing programming, all the time. And their field is also a small world. That small cubicle is their entire world. When they go to the company, that small cubicle where they sit, it's my cubicle, my laptop, my programming, and my salary pack, and my small home. That is their field. That is all is their field. They have nothing outside. And most often we find in the modern times, such people have no hobbies, no family life. Nowadays, if the wife is complaining that, you are not giving time to home, then he tells her, you also become a software engineer. Then you sit in one cubicle, I'll sit in another cubicle. Both of us sitting all day, typing. And life goes on. And in this way, their world is a small world. It's a small world of illusion. Small field of illusion. So, it's like a frog in the well. It's like a frog in the well. The frog doesn't know anything beyond that small well. And the greatest surprise is, people are convinced about their own small world. You ask the barber, why don't you become a little more educated about life? Who are you? Where are you going? He will say, don't disturb me, I'm happy in my own small world. People live like that, in illusion. So this material world creates a very powerful illusion in the life of everyone. And the world appears to be full of meaning for the illusioned conditioned soul. Like for example, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, sometimes the conditioned soul wants to achieve name and fame. So he gets an over-ambitious desire. He says that's compared to climbing up a very high mountain, steep mountain, where there is a chance of slipping and falling. And even if you climb up, there are a lot of thorns and sharp pebbles and stone. And it is very difficult. So one struggles hard to climb. He says to make one's family successful, one works very hard climbing up the tall mountain. He says, in this way, the conscious soul struggles hard and is ready to undergo all kinds of sufferings. So, that kind of statement is also made in Bhagavatam elsewhere. Like father, for example, has to do vivaha yajna of the daughter. So that one aspect is taken and elaborated. Like if you see, if a father wants to get a girl married, first of all, the girl has to be raised from childhood up to her youth, which is not a very easy thing. She has to be protected from dangerous people. Other men can try to exploit her, or she can elope with some man. She has to be protected also. And when the time of marriage comes, the people are asking for dowry, so much money, and one is unable to pay. So ultimately, the settlement of marriage is a big thing. If one wants to settle one's daughter properly in marriage, there are so many parameters that come in between to get that marriage settled. So it is said, vivaha yajna to do, it's like walking through a thorny road for the parents, because a lot of anxiety is involved in that. So why the Shastras are talking so much about the sufferings in family life, this may sometimes discourage the family people to hear about how your conditioned soul suffers in this world. The whole purpose of explaining the difficulties is that individually, every person living in a family, if they deeply contemplate, they can see that there are unlimited sufferings in this world. Although it may be painful to hear from Bhagavatam, if one tries to analyze very carefully the nature of the material world, one will find that, as indeed it is true, that there is a lot of suffering. Of course, the Bhagavatam doesn't end with a tragedy, saying that, you know, you have to suffer like this, that's what is this world, what to do, sometimes happiness, sometimes suffering, tolerated. It doesn't say like that. Bhagavatam says, this is suffering because you are an illusion. You are simply submerged in illusion. There is a eternal life of everlasting happiness. So you have to wake up to the reality. So, just like that song, Jeeva Jago, Gaurachandra Bole, that's a waking up, that's a wake up call. So the saintly people like Vidura instructing Dhritarashtra, and Prabhupada gives his own example, personal example. Prabhupada says, I was a nationalist, follower of Gandhi. Prabhupada was a Gandhian. That was one part of Prabhupada's Leela, that he acted as a nationalist, and he met his spiritual master, Bhikshan Saraswati. And when Prabhupada argued with him, he told him, how do you say that we have to propagate Lord Chaitanya's message? At this time, country is in turmoil and we don't have freedom. And Bhagavan Saraswati was so courageous and bold, he told him, Krishna consciousness is the topmost emergency. It can never wait. Whether our country has freedom or not, it's immaterial. Today one party, British people are ruling, before that Muslims were ruling. Now British people go, then Indians will be ruling, and somebody else may come always. All people are competing to plunder the wealth of India, like the Chinese people, the French, different kinds of people. So who knows who is going to take over next? But that has no connection to spirituality. And he preached to him that suffering of this, our current suffering condition is not because we are under the foreign subjugation. And the real suffering is, we are entrapped in this complex material world, in this entrapment of this body with 24 elements. The soul is suffering because of want of Krishna consciousness. So this was a turning point in Prabhupada's life. When Prabhupada was leaving that time, he told his friend Naren, I have accepted him as my spiritual master in my heart. And Prabhupada told him, now I am so happy to see that the message of Lord Chaitanya is in the right hands. He was very happy. It goes to show that Srila Prabhupada had knowledge of Lord Chaitanya before. And Prabhupada knew about the glory of devotional service. And Prabhupada's wanting to bring about freedom for India was to make whole India Krishna conscious. That was his desire. But still Prabhupada thought, first let us get freedom for India and then we will offer Krishna consciousness to people. But his guru showed him, no, Krishna consciousness cannot wait. No, we should immediately take it. So Prabhupada quotes that example here to show how if he did not meet Bhagavan Saraswati, he would only have landed up as a business magnate. So out of his humility, Prabhupada is writing in this purport. In the same manner, all of us in our lives, if we carefully look back to our material lives, how we led our life, what was our consciousness, what was our quality of lifestyle, and after meeting the Vaishnavas, meeting the spiritual master, how did the quality of my lifestyle change? So we will find a difference of earth and sky, a drastic difference between our material life and spiritual life. And in fact, that is the meaning of spiritual life. Spiritual life doesn't mean one accepts somebody as a guru. One has got a new name. One has got an organization to attach oneself to. One may claim to be a member of some society or organization. And one's name also comes there. And one remains stuck up in the material world. Sometimes it happens that somebody comes to any organization, not only ISKCON. They may come for some time and they like to have a guru, like a fashion. Papa says, guru is not accepted for fashion. Guru is there for enlightenment. Just getting a new name and being a member of a society to earn some kind of material security, that I also belong to some organization, I am not alone. I also have some people, you know, and my cards are with some people and their cards are with me. In this way, I am not a left out, insecure fellow in the society. So sometimes one wants to be a part of a community because the tendency of the soul is to always attach itself to a community, because we come from a spiritual community in the spiritual world. You'll always find people find Kerala-like community, what is that? Tulu community, they're going to come now, isn't it? So we also have, you know, North Indian community, South Indian community, West India, East India community, isn't it? People form communities. Isn't it? Why they form communities? Because people like to attach themselves to some group of people and they can tell everyone, I am also a part of the society. I am not a loner. I am not left alone. I also have people who ask about me. I ask about them. Don't think I have no power. I also have power. I belong to that community. We have power. So sometimes somebody may join a spiritual organization with this kind of mentality. Or sometimes one wants to take Diksha, one wants a new name. Why? Because you can tell everyone I am initiated, which means I am senior to you. So uninitiated people should bow down to me. So just for name, fame, respect, one takes. That is actually not the meaning of religion or spiritual life at all. Here you find Vidura enlightening Dhritarashtra. What a change. What a kind of change. You see here, Prabhupada explains here. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was tightly bound in a network of material affinities related to politics, economy and family attachment. You see, why politics? Related to politics means he was doing some cunning spade work behind the screen. Dhritarashtra was behaving like an elder and behaving like a very good person to the Pandavas superficially, but he was harboring malice towards the Pandu's children, because he always desired to become the king himself. When Pandu was made the king, Dhritarashtra used to desire, why I am not made the king? And later on, when Pandu went to forest and he died, Dhritarashtra was secretly happy that now I could become the king. And then over a period of time, he wanted his sons to take over the kingdom and rule, namely Duryodhana and company. So he was always doing this political ploy. How to see that my sons will flourish and the Pandavas will be destroyed. Also he says economy and also and family attachment. So he was always counting in terms of how we can take over the whole world. And he was always thinking of his own family. Mamaka Pandavaschaiva. He's asking in the first verse of Bhagavad Gita. My people. Like that. And he did everything in his power to achieve so-called success in his planned projects. But he was frustrated from the beginning to the end, so far as his material activities were concerned. And yet, despite his life of failures, he achieved the greatest of all success in self-realization by the forceful instructions of a pure devotee of the Lord, who is the typical emblem of a sadhu. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, that one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all other kinds of association. And by doing so, one will have ample opportunity to hear the sadhus who can cut to pieces the bonds of illusory affection in the material world. So, what transformation of heart should take place when one meets a sadhu? One should be able to clearly see that I was a frog in the well, living in a small circle of me and my family, or me and my community, me and my state, or me and my country. These were all illusions in which I was submerged in before. Now I understand I am not at all a member of this world. One should be able to see one's identity to be different from the body. That's one of the very first revelations one should get. Secondly, one should also be able to distinguish between the powerful display of illusion in front of our eyes and the invisible spiritual reality. So the spiritual reality is invisible and the material reality is visible, but the material reality is illusion and the spiritual reality is the substance, the vastava vastu, the reality. So see the challenge that is placed in front of the conditioned soul. You can get to see something with your eyes and perceive something with your senses, namely the material illusion, but that's not what you should seek happiness after. You are getting to see with your eyes, hear with your sounds with your ears, and smell things with your nose. You can touch, you can taste everything, but you should know that this cannot give me happiness, and we should be convinced of the truth. And the spiritual reality is invisible to our eyes. It's not perceivable, because Lord is called as Adokshaja, Ada Akshaja. He is beyond the range of the senses. He cannot be perceived. But you should have complete faith in that reality. Spiritual world is a reality. Krishna is the reality. And all the Krishna's devotees and Krishna eternally are performing Nitya Lila, going on in the spiritual world. And that's my real home. So how will one get that faith? It is not an ordinary thing. This kind of faith is not, certainly not a blind faith. It's a real faith. But how one gets a real faith? That faith comes by the association of a saintly person. That's why Prabhupada says here. So it cannot be purchased by any amount of price. And this kind of faith, it's most wanted faith, it can come only by seeing the lives of great saintly persons. How? It is a great surprise to the hardcore materialist that I am seeking after wealth, I am seeking after enjoyment in this world, business, money, this, that, so many things. Ato griha chetra sutta apta vitar, everything. And after having obtained everything, still I am not happy. How is it that somebody can cast away all the pleasures of the world and say no to everything and still be happy? How is it possible? No? This is one of the reasons why very wealthy people respect saintly people. This is one of the reasons. Why this person has cast away everything and I feel that I need all these things. I feel a need and I have them also, but after possessing them also I am not happy. And these people don't seem to be having a need for them, nor do they possess them. Or even if somebody gives them abundantly, they don't take it. They live a very, very meager life. You know? They live a very, very simple life. So they become very surprised. Huh? How is it? Ideally speaking, Shastras say that this is the right kind of behavior. What is the right behavior? A hardcore materialist should become attracted to a saintly person. That is a Vedic standard. If he doesn't become attracted to a saintly person, he is unfortunate. That's why you find Angira Muni and Narada Muni, you know, when they are coming to the court of Chitraketu. Chitraketu, you know, with folded palms, he is putting them on a simhasan. And he is sitting on the ground with folded palms and extremely humble. He is bowing down his head when they are coming. You know what he is saying? He is saying a very famous verse. In that verse, what is that verse? Tasmat yuvam gramya pashur mama mudha diya prabhu ande tamasi magnasya jnana deepa udhiryatam. See, very relevant verse here. He is telling them, tasmat yuvam, you two great personalities have come here to enlighten me. Jnana deepa udhiryatam. Please, enlighten me. My heart is very dark. Lit up the torchlight of knowledge in my heart. He is praying to them. And who am I? He is saying, I am a gramya pashu, he says. Gramya pashu has a double meaning. One meaning of gramya pashu is a village dog. There is a difference between a village dog and a dog of a rich man, isn't it? A dog of a rich man is every day bathed very nicely with costly soaps and is fed with costly biscuits. And he travels in the car also. You can see many times sitting behind, peeping out of the window. You have seen that, right? So it's a rich man's dog. But a village dog generally is very dirty, unclean, running here and there. Nobody bathes him. So he's saying that I am a gramya pashu, he says. He's comparing whom? Himself. The gramya pashu. He says, I am like a, you know, village dog. And what does the village dog do? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's all. That's what I am doing. I have no spirituality. I have no awakening, he says. Another meaning of gramya pashu is the word gramya means materialistic. Gramya buddhi means one is thinking about how I can go to movie, how I can go to party, how I can watch TV, how I can eat meat, drink wine, eat, drink and be merry. This is gramya buddhi. Such people having gramya buddhi, their mind always thinks about politics, and they think about sports, cricket, they think about movies, they think about how to enjoy more and more in this life, and they have no information of God. They have no information of life after death. They don't know where are they heading to. They are simply groping in the dark. They are called as also gramya pashu. Because they never enter the temple of God. They never bow down their head to God. And they have no information about God. Completely materialistic. Hardcore kripana. Materialistic. So they are also called as having gramya buddhi. Tasmat yuvam gramya pashu mama moodha diya prabhu. Moodha diya means, fool. I have a foolish intelligence, he says. I don't have proper intelligence. And then he says, I am andha. Andha means, I am blind. Why I am blind? I don't know what is good for me, what is bad for me. I cannot see. Sometimes a blind man, if he tries to cross the road, he may face an accident. Because he is blind, he cannot see what is proper. Only a man with eyes can see. So he is calling himself andha. Ande. And not only I am andha, I am living in this material world which is tamasi. Material world is also a dark place. Without the sun, there will be no light in the material world. When there is no sun, everything is pitch dark. And that also allegorically means material world where living in it is remain submerged in illusion. That is also called as tamasi. Tamasi ma jyotir gamaya mrityor ma amritam gamaya asato ma sadgamaya. That is why it is said we have to go from the world of darkness to the world of light, the spiritual world. So he is saying, I am myself a blind man submerged in the dark material world, and I am in this way suffering from lamentation of not having a child. Or I am having a child and now the child is separated from me. So both situations you find Chitraketu lamenting terribly. And Chitraketu has a firm faith that these two great sadhus, saintly persons who have come, they are transcendental. They are beyond the darkness of this world. They have spiritual intelligence. They are pure-hearted. They have connection to God. And they can offer Krishna to everyone. Krishna se tomar, Krishna dete par, tomara shakati ache. Actually, in the early days, when Prabhupada was preaching, sometimes Prabhupada found that his disciples, because they have a background of coming from the West, you know, they were not having proper respect for Prabhupada. Sometimes, they were dealing with Prabhupada like a friend. Even in cassettes, you will hear sometimes, Prabhupada will be speaking and then suddenly one disciple who is standing next to Prabhupada, he will also speak. When Prabhupada is preaching to someone, suddenly a disciple, he will start telling philosophy in between. Of course, Prabhupada would never correct them immediately. But over a period of time, Prabhupada taught them how to learn to respect the spiritual master. And Prabhupada only had to tell them, hey, your guru means you should behave like this properly. He had to tell them. So in one occasion like that, Prabhupada wanted to teach his disciples a very sublime lesson. So when Prabhupada went to South India, one gentleman, I think it was advocate Viraya, I think. Viraya Swami. One fellow, he gave a beautiful, this much size, silver deity of Krishna. He gifted to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada took it and was very happy and thankful, and he kept the Krishna deity right next to him. And Saraswati, the small girl, child, she came there and she saw this beautiful Krishna and she became very attracted. She immediately snatched it and she started playing with that deity. And some devotees were afraid that, it's a silver deity. So somebody may steal it from her hands, you know. They were afraid that it's not good for the child to play with that. Anyway, they were trying to remove it from her hand and one devotee took it and then Prabhupada took it from the devotee. And then Prabhupada was having that deity in his hand. And suddenly Saraswati broke into tears, and started crying, weeping, sobbing very loudly. And all people assembled there, devotees are asking, Saraswati, what do you want? Why are you crying? She said, where is my Krishna? Where is my Krishna? I'm not able to find, she was saying. And then Prabhupada had in his hand. And then Prabhupada was hiding like this behind. And then one devotee asked Saraswati, can you say, who has Krishna? He asked. And then immediately Saraswati looked at Prabhupada, because everyone knows Prabhupada was most Krishna conscious. Somehow it striked in her mind. She turned to Prabhupada and then she saw Prabhupada's hand was like this. And she immediately understood. She said, Prabhupada has Krishna. She said immediately. And then Prabhupada opened his hands and Saraswati was blissful seeing Krishna in Prabhupada's hands. And Prabhupada taught two sublime lessons from this. One is, unless you cry for Krishna, you can never attain him. Unless you have such a longing. We should want Krishna so much in this world that we should not want anything more than Krishna in this world. Then only we can attain Krishna. Otherwise it's not possible. As long as we have material desires to enjoy the illusion of this world, we will be reborn again and again. And we have to attain a stage where remembrance of Krishna becomes a constant experience for a devotee. Moment after moment a devotee thinks about Krishna. Then only one can attain Krishna. Another lesson Prabhupada taught is that only a pure devotee can offer Krishna to anyone. So Prabhupada was having Krishna and he gave it to Saraswati. He wanted to show Krishna se tumar, Krishna dete par, tumara shakati ache, amito kangal, Krishna Krishna boli, dhai tava pache pache. That's what Prabhupada wanted to teach. That disciple's mood should always be like this. My dear spiritual master, I am a fool. And you are the wise. And my heart is bereft of Krishna. And is dry like a desert. And your heart is always carrying Krishna. Krishna is resting in your heart. And your heart is filled with the ecstatic bliss that comes from dancing and singing in the Mahaprabhu's kirtan. So, your disciple should always have this mood towards the spiritual master. And then one can attain Krishna from the hand of the spiritual master. Because he has the ability to offer Krishna to anyone. So, Chitraketu was in that consciousness when he met Narada and Angira. He had great respect for them. If we become proud of our knowledge, proud of our tiny advancement in spiritual life, and we fail to depend on the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, and we fail to appreciate the association of saintly people around us, then we will see that we don't benefit much from association. See, the problem is what? For example, if there is a difference in level, then the water can flow. But if you don't find so much difference in level, lesser the difference in level, water flow will be less also. Similarly, to the degree in our heart we feel the need of association of saintly people. To that degree, the association will influence us, affect us positively, awaken us, enlighten us, uplift us, and take us closer to Krishna. To the degree we find, I have heard all these things, I know what is so great about association. We don't take it seriously. Then the association is physically there, but spiritually not benefiting us. There is no transformation of heart. In the case of Dhritarashtra, you can picturize the scene in your mind. Vidura and Dhritarashtra, two brothers, same family. And Vidura has been a counselor to Dhritarashtra for several years. And he has given advice after advice after advice. And Dhritarashtra never heard him. Every time Vidura gave a good advice, and Dhritarashtra has been rejecting it. Like initially told, Vidura told Dhritarashtra, give this child away. Don't keep this Duryodhana with you. Dhritarashtra did not hear. Later on Vidura told him, don't arrange this gambling match. Gambling will cause the downfall of Kuru race. Dhritarashtra did not hear. In all those cases, it's very surprising how Vidura was so patient. Can you ever see a counselor giving advice to a counselee? And a counselee is completely whimsical. Every time he breaks the instruction given, how many counselors have the guts to go on giving instruction? You may give once, twice, thrice, and you'll get fed up and say, now I give you up. Now you go and accept somebody else. But Vidura was very patient. But at the same time, Vidura was doing one more thing. What was it? He was earning the trust of Dhritarashtra. Every time Dhritarashtra rejected the instruction of Vidura and acted whimsically, and Vidura continued to show mercy to him, and that helped Dhritarashtra to develop love for Vidura, which went on developing more and more. And in his life, Dhritarashtra could not think of anyone more dear to his heart than Vidura. Vidura was the only one in whom he had complete faith. Of course, he hated the Pandavas, and he loved his children, they all were gone. And he had respect that Krishna is supreme. He bowed down to Krishna, but he always feared Krishna, because Krishna is favoring the Pandavas. Who in this world was the companion of Dhritarashtra other than Vidura? No one else. And Vidura here has returned back to bring about auspiciousness in the life of his own brother, Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was most happy to see his brother, Vidura. And he is ready to sit in front of his brother and hear such harsh words. Can you imagine? If any of us were in front of Vidura, we would have run away. Because here we find Vidura speaking words. Your teeth is broken. Your eyes have gone into the socket. Your ears are hard of hearing. You have become an old man. Now your entire dynasty is vanquished. And you are eating from the hands of Bhima like a household dog. And sitting in this palace. Enough of your enjoyment in the palace. Quit the palace. Go to forest. Become Krishna conscious. Such strong, powerful instructions. And Dhritarashtra did not become offended because Vidura had sufficiently deposited in his account so much of love and so much advice, so much concern for Dhritarashtra. And now we find Dhritarashtra becoming enlightened and awakened. This is considered very auspicious in the life of anyone. If anyone's eyes get opened, Chakshudan Dilo Jai, Janme Janme Prabhu Sai. Spiritual Master, Srila Prabhupada, these personalities have such a role in our life. We should be ready to serve them millions and millions of lives, become their sold out slave. We should be ready to become like their dog, like a dog very loyally and faithfully serves its master. Actually, every animal has some good quality we can learn from. One of the qualities we can learn from a dog is the quality of loyalty and faithfulness. Dog will even give up its life, but not give up the master. That is the meaning of a dog. In the same way, the disciple should have such a outstanding respect for the guru, because the guru does such a job. Like Vidura is, can there be anyone more intimate for Dhritarashtra than Vidura? Nobody in this world for him. His life is gloomy. The only light he sees is in Vidura. Vidura has come here to enlighten him and uplift him. Now, otherwise, why is he following his path? He won't follow his path. In our life also, Guru has come with the torchlight of knowledge, even in this world of darkness. And he is leading us. Like we say, even the Gayatri Mantra, the meaning of Gayatri Mantra is lead kindly light. That's the meaning. Please lead me to the right path. So Guru is walking ahead of us with a torch showing us the path. Walk in this way. We have to just follow him. So that is why we sing in the song. What is that verse? The first line. He takes us from the material world to the spiritual world. In the Guru Puja, third line, what is that? Yahara Prasade Bhai? Yebhava Tariya Jai. So, the Guru is also called as a Paragham. Paragham means one who is like a boat, which takes us from this world to that world, from material world to spiritual world. Even Devahuti says the same thing. Same word uses, Andha and Tamasi, two words uses. Tasya Tvam Tamaso Andasya. You see, Andha and Tamas, two words she uses. Dushparasyadya Paragam Satchakshur Janmanamante Labdamme Padanugrahat. You're given me the Satchakshu, the true eyes. This is not true eye. This is defective, imperfect eyes. But what is the true eye? The spiritual eye. Divya Chakshu. Oh Guru, she's telling her own son Kapila, who becomes her spiritual master. You're given me the Satchakshur Janmanamante Labdamme Padanugrahat. By your mercy, I have attained the Divya Chakshu. And you are the Dushpara Syadhya Paragam, this the toughest river to cross over, or the toughest ocean to cross over, is the Babasagar. Most difficult ocean to cross over. Because first of all, you cannot even know that you are in Samsara Sagar. For that only you need Guru to tell you. My dear friend, you are suffering in this world. Wake up. Uttishtata, Jagrata, Prapyavara, Nibodhata. Guru has to wake us up. And then, when we see the ocean and we see the insurmountable ocean of material existence, we fear, will I be ever able to cross over it? And then the Guru himself leads us, by leading ahead of us, and we are falling behind him. That's why we should be ready to serve him millions of lifetimes. Actually, serving him million lifetimes and being in the spiritual world, there is no difference. Because living a life in enlightenment is as good as living in the spiritual world. Because whatever we do in the spiritual world, we do the same activities here. So that is why Chakshudan Dilo Jai, Janme Janme Prabhu Sai. So in this way, Prabhupada humbly presents his own case of how he met his spiritual master and his spiritual master enlightened him. And Prabhupada's gratitude, his spiritual master can always be seen. He never took any credit. When he went to the West, when disciples glorified him, Prabhupada said, what have I done? I am like a postal peon. I just gave what my spiritual master gave me. I am just handing over these things to you. I have not done anything. And when he returned to India, Indians were glorifying him. He said, what I have done? All these Western boys and girls, you know, they have helped me to start this movement in the West, and now it's coming to India. I have not done anything. Prabhupada never took credit. He always gave it to Guru and Vaishnavas. And he honestly believed that it was not some strategy he used to win the heart of people. He honestly believed that, yes, I am insignificant. It's all others who have done it. So Prabhupada valued the association of his spiritual master. Like he says, when all people went to Sheshashayi Mandir, Prabhupada was sitting in that koshi, attending the lecture of his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's English was very difficult to understand. In fact, even the British times, and the British people, the mayor was saying that we can employ this man to teach our men English. So they were considering of having Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as a tutor of English for whom? For British people. Such was his English. So Prabhupada says when he was hearing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's lecture, most of it he couldn't understand. Head or tail of it. But then you may ask, then why was he sitting? He knew that here is my spiritual master. If I am just sitting in his association, something will go in, something will enter my heart and I may get purified. No? Prabhupada says, although I didn't understand much, I understood very little. I was sitting and associating with him. He had such love and respect for his spiritual master. So, Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ajamida, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, prajna, broke at once a strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Now this can happen to grihasthas also. Like for example, young people have dedicated their life to a movement by becoming brahmacharis. They have cut their tie of familial attachment to mother, father, family, friends, society, their own business circles, everything. And they have vidyate hridaya granthis, chidyante sarva samshayaha, kshiyante chasya karvani, drishteiva atmanishwari. They have come and joined the movement. But even in the life of grihasthas, if a husband, wife, children, they are living, the same thing is applicable to them. If they give up materialistic approach to life, and they take a completely spiritual approach, you go to some houses, like I had gone to Bombay, Juhu, there's an Ananda Mohan Prabhu, there he had invited me to his house. He is in such a vast. So you go to his house, you find that the altar in the front, and they have program just like any ISKCON temple. They have six bhoga offerings going on every day, the deity, big deity room. Most of the house is deity room only. Most of the house. And there is kirtan in the morning, whole program is going on, Mangalarti, Bhagavatam class, and evening people are coming to attend programs. Husband is giving one lecture in one room and wife is giving lecture in another room. It's more than ISKCON temple. So that means they have broken the tie of network of familial affection, which means they have no material love. Material love is finished. Now they have spiritual love for each other. Husband, wife, children, they are all concerned about each other's spiritual advancement. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother Vidura. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.